is a heavy and vulnerable conversation to have. This platform is a safe place for all individuals to come share their life's journeys of surviving grief without judgment.
I'd like to welcome everyone to the QT Surviving Grief Podcast. My name is Tiffany Ware. I am your host. And today I have a very, very, very special guest on. I first came to know this young lady about 2 to 3 years ago. We had a tragedy here in Columbia, Tennessee, and she came to my mom's church, Wayman Chapel AME Church, and she gave us a grief session. And I did not know, you know, here we are 3 years later, I'm needing this support for myself. And so I would just like to introduce to a lot of people, Miss Kristen Small.
My little Hello, hi everyone.
Right, all the claps.
It's such a pleasure to meet you. I'm so happy to be here.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining today, Kristen. This is it's been a journey, and I appreciate you being part of my journey. And I'm just grateful for you coming today for sure. So I like to start it off. Quentin was a big cook. Like, he loved to cook. So I always like to start these conversations off kind of light. And this is a question you probably were not prepared for, but I think you should be able to answer it. And so I'm going to start off today with, being that we're entering into the holiday season, what is your favorite holiday dish and why? It could be Thanksgiving or Christmas dish. What's your favorite thing to eat?
I'm going to go with what just came to my mind. So first thing that came to my mind is macaroni and cheese. Yes. Macaroni and cheese is definitely a crowd favorite. But here's the funny thing. It's that I went vegan years ago and have been transitioning back. So I have to let go of cheese again. So I would say a close second, very close second, would be candied yams. And you can have yams as a vegan.
Gotcha. That's so funny because macaroni and cheese is my absolute favorite food. Holiday time, anytime. Mm-hmm. So that is crazy. We got that in common. Did not know that.
We do.
Well, yes. So, all right. So we got our holiday question out the way. I want to just open it up, Kristen, for you to just tell us a little bit about who you are, your background, where you're from, your credentials, all of that type of thing. Let the people know who Kristen Small is.
Absolutely. And I appreciate this question and just the opportunity to introduce myself to everyone. Okay. But, you know, to sum me up, as a person, I would say I'm a Black woman. I'm a social worker. I'm a mental health therapist. I'm a helper. I'm a healer. I'm a believer. I'm a daughter, a sister, an aunt, and a friend. And really, just in a nutshell, I'm just a human who believes wholeheartedly in the sanctity of life and the healing power of love and care and connection. And at my core, I would say I'm a bridge builder. You know, committed to helping people reconnect with themselves, their loved ones, and their communities that hold them. And in my role as all of the things that I just named, I would say that I see it somewhat as a guide as well, supporting others as they discover their own strength and heal their wounds and find their forward path. So it's my belief that we're all deserving of that joy and that peace. And I'm here. It's kind of my core value to create that safe space where those things are possible. I would say connection is everything to me, connection to ourselves, to one another, and to the greater purpose that fuels each of us.
Wow. That was amazing. It sounds, one of my questions often is, what's your purpose? And you just summed up your background, your purpose, and everything. That was lovely. I love the way you roll that out. So let me ask you this. What got you into the mental health counseling field, therapy field? What interested you in that, to go that path?
Yeah, you know, I have a long story, but I'm going to make it short. But I would say in a nutshell, it would be, you know, growing up in LA, Los Angeles, California, where I'm from, I saw firsthand the struggles and the strength within my own community. And I felt deeply impacted by that need for healing. So not just for me, but for those that are around me. And I would say I was very moved on a foundational level by Mahatma Gandhi's words, you know, to be the change that you wish to see in the world. And for me, that felt like a personal call to action. And so I realized that one of the most powerful ways to foster change was to help others access their own paths to healing and their resilience and their growth. And so therapy felt like that bridge, you know, it felt like that gap to bring hope and wholeness into our community. And initially, I didn't know that it was therapy. Before I was a therapist, I was a teacher. Before I was a teacher, I was pre-law in undergrad. But gratefully, all of those roads were leading me here to my home as a therapist. So that's how I got here.
Wow. So you, all of it, that wow, you had a few career paths, but I can definitely see how it wrapped around to where you are now, you know, really living in your purpose and what you were called to be here for. So in your therapy work, your mental health work, what topics do you cover? Of course, I'm very familiar with the grief, but what other topics do you you cover with your clientele?
Absolutely. You know, I would say anything that touches the human heart, but to add that specifically, I would say anxiety, coping skills, depression, self-esteem, you know, those life transitions, relationship mm-hmm. issues, spirituality, men's and women's issues, just a lot of the things that touch us, but definitely the trauma and PTSD aspect of this work as well.
Awesome. And what does your clientele look like? Do you have seniors, children? What is your the demographics, I guess, of your clientele?
Yeah, you know, for me, my practice is intentionally diverse. So I like to welcome individuals across a various, you know, wide range of age groups, backgrounds, relationship dynamics, the whole shebang. But I would say I primarily work with adults and seniors when it comes to navigating life's transitions, as I name, personal growth, and even sometimes those complex family dynamics. But I also enjoy supporting teens as they develop that self-identity and the confidence and those coping skills. But I do work with couples and families as well, because I believe that that's an essential foundation to who we are as a global community as well. So just those focuses on communication, healing, and building strong and supportive relationships. So I would say, you know, something that we've discussed amongst colleagues, I would say my main demographic are those who are ready to engage in the work, you know, when it comes to the mm-hmm. self-discovery, healing, and all of those fun things, regardless of age or background. So yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. So that was a little background about Miss Kristen Small. Our audience does have questions, but I want to delve first into some of your grief stories. So do you remember the first time that you experienced loss or grief?
You know, it's hard for me to remember the first time, the very first time I experienced grief and loss, but I certainly remember one of the most significant losses of my life, which was the loss of my maternal grandfather, and his name is Charlie Jones.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Gotcha. So in that moment, that being one of your more significant memories of grief, how were you able to maintain your health and also just your well-being during that time?
Yeah. You know, grief to me is a profound teacher, and it was definitely a profound teacher in my life. in those moments that he passed. I was in high school at the time, and you know, I didn't have all the tools that I had now, but over time, you know, through the years and in remembering and honoring my grandfather's memory, I realized I had to give myself permission to feel the full range of my emotions without judgment. And that's such an important thing to remember. So that's sitting with the sadness, sitting with the anger, and sitting with the loneliness, and not rush through that. So in that process, I did lean heavy on my support system, my family, my friends, mentors, and others in the community who reminded me that I wasn't alone. I did some practicing and some grounding routines like journaling and meditation. I have often used music as a form of soothing and support when it comes to meditation as well. And really, I would say what's been an anchor for me all those years since his passing is that I've been very intentional to honor the full scope of my grandfather's memory and not merely his final moments, you know?
I like that. I think sometimes we focus on what took place in those moments. However, the importance, as you're speaking to, of honoring that life. I liked it. So rolling out of that question, when we think about, of course, you know all about the five stages of grief. You know, then those moments, did you experience any of the five stages? Did you experience all of them? Did they come in waves, or what was your experience with the five stages of grief?
Yeah, absolutely. I experienced every single one of them. And I would say I've moved through each of them in my own way. So in the beginning was a little bit of denial. Like, I didn't want to believe the reality of that loss. You know, my grandfather was the greatest man I've ever known to this day. And, you know, I didn't want to accept that he was gone. And so there were intense moments where I felt numb or detached. Shortly after, anger followed, and I found myself angry at everything, from the circumstances to the people around me to even myself. And with the bargaining, you know, like, was the place of the what ifs, you know, and the hope that maybe things could be different if only I had done something different, if only I had reached out more, or if only, you know, you name it. I created so many stories around the bargaining. And depression for me felt like a deep ache, you know, a sadness that definitely came in waves. But eventually, with time and with self-compassion, I reached acceptance, this place where I could acknowledge my loss without it defining my everyday, you know. And each stage taught me something about my strength and about the importance of honoring every emotion in my healing process.
Gotcha. I like that. So with that being said, did it shift your perspective on life at that time or even now? And if so, how did it shift your perspective?
Absolutely. It definitely shifted my perspective on life in, I mean, so many powerful ways. It made me appreciate both the fragility and the sacredness of every moment and every relationship, you know. It taught me not to take time for granted, you know, to show up fully and to speak my love freely, you know. And grief also very much deepened my empathy, especially for those navigating their own losses. And it helped me realize the importance of embracing both joy and sorrow, because both of them have gifts, you know? And over time, it reminded me to take care of myself too, and allowing myself the grace to heal in my time and in my way, and to see resilience not just as a strength, you know, but also as a commitment to honoring all parts of my journey. So I would say in many ways, Grief made me more grounded and intentional and helped me focus on living a life that was rooted in love and in purpose and in connection.
Oh, my gears are going in my head. Resilience. Just some of the words you're speaking, it's so true, and it does help navigate that grief journey. So thank you for just sharing a little bit about your grief story and, you know, how you worked through it to move forward and to really, you know, get you to the point you are at now where you are helping people every day navigate their own grief and their own, you know, struggles. So thank you so much for sharing. So at Absolutely. This time, we are going to get into some of the audience questions from QT Surviving Grief from our followers. So I have my handy dandy sheet here with questions because I want to definitely describe these questions the way they came straight to me, whether people commented or whether they sent me private inbox messages. I just want to honor, you know, their language and everything and their questions. So for the next 30 minutes or so, you're going to be our resident therapist. and so we are going to get into question number one. So question number one was, is it more impactful to attend in-person therapy sessions or virtual sessions? I guess so the question is, what's the difference? And is one more impactful than the other?
That's a good question. And you know, it's a question that has definitely been a popular one, especially since COVID. You know, I feel like so much of our lives have changed since, you know, the grief of COVID, you know?
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, I would say that time taught us a lot of things, both personally and professionally. And it did show us that both forms of therapy can be equally impactful. Honestly, you know, I would say they both have their own unique strengths, and the impact really does depend on the individual. So, you know, in those in-person sessions, they offer kind of a physical presence that can feel grounding, especially for clients who value that shared space and can find comfort in those face-to-face interactions. So the energy and the immediacy of being in the same room can really foster a sense of safety and intimacy that's really powerful for the healing process. But on the other hand, you know, virtual sessions offer accessibility and flexibility, which can reduce those barriers to consistent therapy. So those individuals with busy schedules, with mobility issues, or even some anxiety around traveling, virtual sessions can make therapy more sustainable, you know. And honestly, I found that virtual sessions can create a sense of openness where clients feel more comfortable being vulnerable in the familiarity of their own space. So ultimately, you know, both can be impactful, and it comes down to whatever feels most supportive and accessible for the client. And even sometimes a mix of both in-person and virtual sessions can work well as well. You know, for instance, I've had clients who, you know, can be in person, but for business trips and even for vacations, they're like, I am not missing my sessions, and they will post up in the hotel, you know, just to make sure they still have that time. So I would say whatever works best for that person.
Gotcha. Yeah. So it's an individual thing, which makes sense. And I didn't even think about the COVID piece. Thank you for bringing that up. Because, yeah, we were virtual with everything at that time. So that shifted a lot.
We did everything but go to the grocery store virtually. We did everything virtually.
That is right. Wow. So question number two was, how can I overcome grief without staying mad? Also, is it wrong for me to be this angry?
Yeah. That's a big one, you know, and I think it's so important to validate that anger and that it is a natural part of grief, you know, especially when we feel we've lost someone or something that's deeply meaningful to us. So no, it's not wrong at all to feel angry. Grief is complex, you know, And anger is often our mind and our body's way of protecting us from the overwhelming hurt that lies underneath. And so one way to navigate that grief without staying stuck in that anger is to make space to feel and to understand that anger. Let it breathe, you know, yeah. And then gently examine what it might be trying to protect, what it might be trying to communicate to you. You know, is it shielding you from sadness, from disappointment, or is it even shielding you from guilt? So working through those underlying emotions in therapy or with a supportive person can really help release that grip of anger. And even practices like journaling or creative expression can help make sense of that anger. Like physical movement can be very, very powerful too. We're talking about walking, dancing, or even just breathing deeply to release what's locked inside. So, you know, I'm sure we've heard it said many times, but it's so, so true. And I probably will say about 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 times here too. And that is that grief is not linear, you know, and that process of releasing anger doesn't happen overnight. So it's so important to be patient and to be kind with yourself and to know that it's okay if you feel angry at times on this journey, but with the compassion and with the time, it can shift to a softer form of your healing process.
Yeah, and thank you for bringing up the physical piece of it, because I've been thinking myself about getting into boxing for a lot of my anger that I'm having, you know, and I can see where channeling that energy, it has to go somewhere. If not, it just stays in you and
that's right.
You start having a lot of other issues. So I'm trying to identify ways on my own journey. So thank you for reminding me. That's something I need to hop on trying to get involved in to release some of my anger.
That's right. We got to move that body. We got to move it.
Yeah. Okay. So question number 3 is, I hear the phrase purpose in pain. How can I find purpose while grieving a painful divorce, especially when your spouse just leaves?
You know, purpose in pain is such a powerful concept, you know, and especially when you're going through something as deeply as painful and personal as a divorce, you know, in the immediate aftermath of that separation, especially when your spouse leaves abruptly, you know, finding a sense of purpose can feel almost impossible. And this kind of grief isn't just about the loss of the relationship. It's about the loss of dreams. We're talking about a loss of security, often a loss of identity. So I want to acknowledge and name first that it's okay to feel the weight of that pain and allow yourself to move through it gradually. Keyword gradually. And so finding purpose doesn't mean that the pain disappears. You know, instead, it's about learning to shape that pain into something meaningful for yourself, for your own life. And sometimes purpose starts small, like rediscovering your needs and identity outside of that marriage. Who are you outside of that marriage? Exploring interests that you put aside or even embracing your own resilience. Purpose can look like setting new intentions for the kind of relationships you do want and the kind of life you do want to build and the love that you want to give yourself, you know? And it's also about learning what this experience might be teaching you. Maybe it's a deeper understanding of self-worth. Maybe it's the courage to set boundaries, or maybe it's discovering the strengths you didn't realize that you even had. You know, that path is deeply personal and there's no rush to get over it. You know, I don't even like that language, you know, or to be completely healed. Purpose can be found in each small step forward. So in each act of self-compassion and in the knowledge that you're creating a life for yourself that honors you your resilience, your strength. Healing from that kind of pain is a process, but with time, it can open doors to parts of yourself that you didn't even know were there. So you got to give it time.
Yeah. I was thinking too about, I was not married, but sometimes that codependency piece, is that tethered into that as well? Somewhere where you really have to, like you said, work to identify who you are now, coming out of a relationship.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like, if there was a relationship where codependency was present, you are absolutely learning now to stand on your two feet, knowing that that strength was there all the time. You know, and so developing that strength, developing that connection and that intimacy with self, you know?
Yeah, that's a good point. Okay, so question number four, we're just rolling along, y'all. Question number four, as a believer in Jesus, in Christ Jesus, how do I accept what the Bible says when the scriptures are not or do not seem to ease my pain?
That's a good one.
Yeah.
That's a really good one.
It's deep. It's a deep
That's one. A very real, it's a real question, you know? And I'm glad it came forward, you know? And I can say, as a fellow believer, I understand that tension that can arise when we turn to the Bible for comfort and the words just don't seem to ease the pain that we're experiencing. You know, it's one of the most difficult things, you know? Yeah. When your heart is broken and you feel isolated in your pain, reading verses that are meant to bring peace sometimes feel distant, or they feel like that's not accessible to me. Why isn't that working for me? You know? But here's the thing that I always try to remind myself and those that are believers that I work with, you know, similar to healing, faith is not a linear journey. So we're not talking about a straight shot. And so we're saying that it is okay to wrestle with our beliefs and to question and to feel uncertain. Just because the scripture doesn't immediately heal you doesn't mean that God isn't present in the midst of your pain. It means that sometimes the comfort we seek, that we're needing, comes not just from reading the word, but from sitting with it, from allowing ourselves to feel everything that we're experiencing and being open to God's presence in those moments. I mean, think about it. For instance, we're talking about the Bible, and there were moments in the Bible where even the most faithful people experienced their pain, their anger, and their doubt. Look at David. You know, he's the psalmist who to this day, we're still reciting and singing the lyrics that he wrote and those most beautiful prayers that he penciled out of anguish, that he was crying out to God, often in moments of despair. Or Job. We're talking about somebody who struggled deeply with understanding his suffering.
Oh, yeah.
And God didn't immediately offer either of them an answer, but he was present through it all, you know? So sometimes the Bible isn't about providing that immediate care, that immediate answer, but about reminding us that we're not alone in our suffering. So the scriptures can be a guide, you know, but in those moments when the world feels hollow, it might be helpful to remember that it's okay to feel our hurt and that God is with you in that pain, even when you might not feel it, or you might not understand, or you might not be able to feel his presence right away. It's a reminder that healing is not immediate and it's okay to take your time with it. You know, I'm reminded of a phrase that I've leaned on myself, is that, you know, when you can't trace his hand, trust his heart. You know, talking about God. We don't always have all the answers, but we can accept God's love and care. It's that struggle. It's in the struggle, the questions and the rawness of your emotions, that God's presence can really meet you in the most profound ways. You know, I think Many of us can testify to that if we look at our experiences. So take the time that you need to whoever, you know, ask that question, and know that God is with you, even in the moments where the scriptures feel distant. Hold on to the truth and trust that the healing will come in its time.
Yeah. Just took us to church, Kristen. Took us to church there.
That's okay. Yeah. Every now and then we gotta go to church. Every now and then.
Yeah, we do.
No.
Yes, we do. And I, whoever sent that question, that was, when I read it, I thought, oh, well, yeah, I'm right there now. Yeah, I'm wondering the same thing. So thank you for whoever submitted that question. Next question is, will I ever truly stop feeling anger, sadness, loss, bitterness, pain, and regret?
Yeah. That is an important question. That is such an important question. And again, it's so important to acknowledge first before we go into the fixing. It's important to offer that acknowledgement to the depth of the emotions that this individual is feeling, that many of us in grief are feeling right now, you know, anger, sadness, loss, bitterness, pain, and regret. You know, those are heavy burdens to carry, and it's completely understandable to question, will they ever move? Will they ever go away? And to that, I want to say this. Healing is not a destination. It is a journey. And the feelings that you're experiencing are valid. And while it might seem impossible right now, it is possible to heal and find peace, even if it doesn't look the way that you imagined it, you know? And when we're in the depths, in that darkness of that pain, it can feel overwhelming. It can feel an ending. But over time, with the right support, with self-compassion, and with tools, the intensity of these emotions can and will shift. So it's also important to name that it may never completely go away. But the way that you relate to them and the way that you cope with them will change. You know, the pain and the anger might lessen in intensity, but that doesn't mean that you're getting over it or moving along in the way that society sometimes expects us to. You know, healing is more about learning how to carry the pain with more grace, with more understanding, and with a deeper connection to who you are becoming in this process. And it's also important to recognize, Tiffany, that part of healing involves giving yourself permission to experience those emotions fully. So often we're trying to suppress them, to deny them, thinking that feeling angry or sad for too long means that we're not healing. But emotions are a part of our experience as humans. Feeling them doesn't make you weak. It makes you real. Right. And sometimes you need to feel what you feel in order to truly process it and to begin moving through it, you know? So if you continue to give yourself that compassion, continue to give yourself that support, whether it's through therapy or connecting with loved ones or other forms of healing, you will find over time that you begin to breathe easier, feel lighter, and eventually you will have those moments of peace again. So the anger, sadness, the regret, the bitterness, it may not disappear entirely, but they won't have power over you. They won't have that grip on you that it once did. So it's a process. And it's okay to be in that process. You will heal in your time and in your way.
Yeah, I think it can be uncomfortable more than anything. Like, even what I'm dealing with right now, it's just so uncomfortable. Like, you know, having to sit with, you know, your sack of feelings, as Quinn used to say, it's tough. And you really have to, you realize a lot about yourself, but it's just so uncomfortable. Like you said, you got to feel your feels, as people say a lot. Yeah.
You know, and I think a part of that discomfort, Tiffany, is number one, because those aren't easy emotions to name mm-hmm. or to feel. Number one, it's important to acknowledge that. But a lot of times, most of us haven't given ourselves permission throughout our lifetime to feel heavy things. Mm-mm. You know, for the longest of us growing up, if we were unhappy, what did, you know, our parentals or our guardians or our teachers, what did they tell us? Oh, fix your face. You know, or what did they, uh-huh. you weren't allowed to feel things.
Right.
And so now we're adults and we're experiencing emotions, and it's like, I don't like this. I don't know what to do with mm-hmm. this. And again, our emotions are here to help us. They're here to teach us. They're here to really befriend us, even though it might not seem like it, you know? Mm-hmm. And the more that we become acquainted with them, that discomfort, again, won't have dominion. It won't have power over us, you know? Once we allow ourselves the opportunity to feel it more.
Yes, yes. Good question. And I absolutely love the response to that question. So another question we had come in was, what is unhealthy grieving? And how will I know if I'm experiencing unhealthy grieving?
That's a good question, too. These are some good questions. Your audience ain't playing around, Tiffany.
I know.
I'm happy to see everybody leaning into this. That's a powerful question. Unhealthy grieving can really look different for everyone, you know, but generally it would refer to ways in which someone's grief process is preventing them from healing, you know, or moving forward in a healthy way. So again, we name that grief is natural and that it's a personal process. My grief might not look like yours, but we all feel it. It's something that we all experience as humans. But it's in those moments that it becomes overwhelming or all-consuming, that it can affect your mental and your emotional and even your physical health. So I would say some signs of that, just to put it on the ground, that can look like avoidance or suppression. So if you're avoiding your grief or you're pushing down your emotions, you know, I'll just move on, you know, or that's a sign that your grief might not be fully processed. Grief requires feeling. It requires that of us. And so suppressing it, it does not allow us to heal. Something I tell my clients often is that we cannot face what we will not confront, you know?
Yeah.
You know, and in that, you know, saying that, oh, I'm sorry, we won't conquer. I'm sorry. We will not conquer what we do not confront. You know, we cannot heal what we do not reveal. That is an essential piece to our healing process. And so when we avoid it, we're creating deeper emotional and even physical issues that might manifest and show up in our lives later on. I would say another sign could be isolation. So it's normal to need space. Mm-hmm. It's important to say that. So while it is normal to need space, completely isolating yourself or shutting out loved ones or support system can be a sign that you're not grieving in a healthy way. You know, grief can definitely make us want to withdraw. I can absolutely affirm that was 100% the truth for me in various forms of grief throughout my lifetime. But understand that connection is vital. It is a vital part of healing. So if you find yourself disconnected from your community, that can prevent you from moving forward, you know? And also the ruminating and the obsessing. So if you're constantly replaying the same thoughts, the same scenarios over and over again, especially those that cause that pain or that regret, that can keep us stuck in our past. And that unresolved grief you know, it often involves that dwelling on what could have been. You know, we talked about the bargaining before, mm-hmm. or what should have happened.
Yeah.
And that can prevent us from living in the present moment and working through our emotions in a way that's balanced and healthy. And even, we talked about anger, but mm-hmm. even the bitterness that won't subside can be a form of unhealthy grieving. You know, like I said, you know, anger is natural. And something that a lot of my clients are surprised to hear is that anger is actually one of my favorite emotions. It's a powerful emotion. Mm-hmm. But when it's prolonged and it becomes all consuming, it can affect your relationships. It can affect your overall well-being. So it's important to feel and to process that anger. But if you're holding on to it and it becomes more about punishing yourself or other mm-hmm. people, that anger can become toxic.
Yes.
You know? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, what's another sign of? Okay, the physical or emotional numbness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, feeling emotionally numb or detached from your surroundings for an extended period of time can be a sign that you're not grieving in a healthy way. So again, it's important to name that some of these things are a normative protective response to trauma, the numbness piece, but chronic numbness, you know, mm-hmm. numbness that has gone on for an extended time means that we're not allowing ourselves to feel or experience our emotions fully. And that can be a sign of emotional avoidance, you know. And of course, mm-hmm. I think all of us can name and understand that self-destructive behaviors. Things like alcohol, drugs,
right.
you know, excessive mm-hmm. uses of these substances, or even engaging in harmful behaviors like overworking. You know, I'll just get it done. I don't want to deal with it, you know, or unhealthy eating habits or even self-harm. To cope with your grief is a big, big, big red flag. And so all of these behaviors are attempts to numb the pain, but they often delay the healing. And they can make your grief so much more intense, you know. So I would say, you know, just answering that question further, that there's no right way to grieve. You know, it's more about it's not about having a neat and tidy process. But if you feel like your grief is taking over your life and it's affecting your ability to function, or that you're stuck in a cycle that is not moving, it might be a sign that your process is becoming unhealthy for you. I would say a key factor in this is to make sure that you are still able to function. And that you're still able to live your life in a way that honors your emotions. Going back to what we just named about our emotions. Honors them without it taking over us or damaging us. So if we're feeling stuck, if we're feeling overwhelmed, it's essential to seek support. So again, rather through therapy, talking with your loved ones, or engaging in healing community and whatever that looks like for you. So. Again, you know, grief isn't linear, but it should move in a way that allows you to process and eventually find meaning and peace after loss. And if we're struggling to find that movement or that balance, reach out to support, get guidance, get help to help you navigate that grief in a healthier way.
Yeah, I think whoever sent that in, I think it's good that they recognize, like, oh, I may be grieving unhealthily, so. That was a really good question. This one kind of leads into something you mentioned in your last answer when we were talking about mentioning the repetitiveness of running through scenarios in your mind. This question is, I found my loved one deceased. Mm-hmm. How can I get over seeing that in my head?
Yeah. Oof. Yeah. Mm-hmm. First and foremost, I want to acknowledge the depth and the pain of that trauma. It's important, again, that we acknowledge what we're feeling. You know, Finding a loved one deceased is a profound and life-altering experience. And the emotional and psychological impact of such an event can be immensely overwhelming. The images, the memories of that moment can absolutely linger, and it's not unusual for them to replay in your mind, you know. But I do want this individual, I do want you to know that healing from this is possible, even though it's going to take time, even though it's going to take patience, even though it's going to take care and support. So when it comes to getting through that memory, I want to encourage you to approach it with compassion. I cannot accentuate that enough, with compassion for yourself. So it's important to recognize that this is not something like we named that you just get over quickly. Trauma like this takes time to process, and you deserve to gift yourself grace and to heal at your own pace. And here are a few ways that I would say would be helpful in working through those challenging memories. And again, you've probably heard me do this through every question that we've named this for, Tiffany, and that is the acknowledgement.
Yeah.
Acknowledge this trauma. The first step forward is to allow yourself to feel what you're feeling. Whether it's sadness, anger, even confusion, it's common to try to suppress those emotions because they feel too heavy. But healing begins with acknowledgement. And so by allowing yourself to feel that pain, you're not keeping yourself stuck in it. You're actually creating that space for healing to be welcomed in. And another thing that comes to mind is grounding techniques. So if you find yourself constantly reliving that image or feeling triggered by it, grounding techniques can definitely help you get back to this present moment. So this can be something as simple as focusing on your breathing, paying attention to your breath, your inhale and your exhale. Something that I love to do as a grounding exercise is the 5-4-3-2-1 method. And so it could be identifying five things that you can see around you. You could say, I see the plant, I see the lamp, I see a picture frame, I see a door, you know, or even feeling the texture of an object that's in your hand. So grounding exercises are so helpful in moments when memory feels overwhelming. Mm-hmm. Another important process, and Tiffany, I know that you can even relate to this piece, is the reframing of the memory. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yep.
So while it seems impossible, reframing how you view the memory over time can be so helpful. So this doesn't mean that we're forgetting or that we're diminishing the significance of what happened, but rather that we're giving ourselves permission to see the entire picture of our loved one's life rather than just that moment. You know, it's exactly what I did when I was processing my grandfather's grief. I didn't want to diminish him to that moment, to cancer. He was so much more than cancer.
Yeah.
His life was so much bigger than that. And so over that, over time, that can help us shift the focus from the trauma of the event to honoring the entire person and their life and that love that you shared, you know? And something that we're doing right now that can help you talk about it.
Yeah.
One of the most healing things you can do is share your experience. This is how Tiffany is finding pain and purpose through her pain, rather.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's by talking about it. So whether it's with a therapist, whether it's with a trusted friend, whether it's in a support group, you know, often we keep our trauma to ourselves, but that's one of the surefire ways that we can get our pain to grow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it can feel like it's consuming us then. But it's when we shed light on it, when we speak about it in a safe and supportive environment, it can definitely help us process those painful memories and release some of the intensity that they've held on us, you know? So other things like, again, seeking support, self-care, understanding that our healing takes time. Those are other things that can be really helpful. And I just want to remind this person that it's okay not to have all the answers right now. It's okay to be in pain. And it's okay to struggle with memories. What happened is not something that can be fixed in an instant. But with the right support, with the right patience, and with that time, you can begin to heal that. And your experience matters, and you have to know that. And reaching out for support is one of the strongest things that you can do in advocating for your healing right now. So I'm glad that they asked you that question, Tiffany.
Yeah, I think oftentimes we feel like it may be a quick fix to things, and I've come to find out it's no quick fix to grief. You have to definitely, go through it. So, yeah, I appreciate that question as well. Which leads me into the next question, which talks about, someone asked, what is cognitive behavior therapy? Do you use it in your practice? And if so, they just want some examples of what that looks like.
Okay. Yeah. CBT is definitely a popular form of talk therapy. And what it does is that it focuses on the connection between our thoughts, our feelings, and our behaviors. So the basic premise of CBT is that our thoughts significantly influence our emotions and our actions. So when we change the way that we think about a situation, then we can change the way that we feel. And then we can change the way that we respond to it. So we're using our thoughts, as that seed for change. So for an example, let's say a person is feeling anxious about going to a social event, In CBT, we would explore the thoughts that's driving that anxiety, such as, I'm going to embarrass myself, or people are going to judge me. These thoughts are often exaggerated, or they're not even helpful to us. And so CBT really helps to work to challenge that thought and reframe those thoughts. And so the goal is to replace unhelpful thinking patterns with more realistic, more balanced thoughts that lead to healthier emotions and responses and behaviors. So for me, I absolutely use CBT in my practice because I found it to be very effective. And it's grounded in research that shows its ability to help people manage a wide range of issues. So whether it's we're talking about anxiety or depression or grief or trauma, I myself have even seen it be transformative for so many of my clients, particularly in helping them break those cycles of negative thinking that have held them back for so long.
I like those examples. And I think sometimes we do have to reframe our minds and retrain our ways of thinking. So I appreciate that answer. So this is a good one. From a mental health and spiritual perspective, how should we interpret dreams of our loved ones who have passed away?
That's a good question. That's a good one. Dreams, they are, especially dreams of loved ones specifically, who have passed away, they can be deeply meaningful, both from a mental and spiritual perspective. And in my experience, there are many ways that we can interpret such dreams. And so it's important to recognize that the significance of these dreams can vary greatly depending on a person's individual beliefs or even the cultural context and also the emotional state of the person that's dreaming. So from a mental health perspective, dreams often serve as a reflection of our subconscious mind. So that can be a way for us to process unresolved emotions, experiences, or thoughts that we may not have fully confronted during our waking hours. So when someone dreams about a loved one who has passed, it might be a sign that they're still working through the grief or the feelings or the loss. It might be a way for the mind to process that pain or sometimes the love and the connection that still exists. Mm-hmm. For instance, a dream in which a loved one appears might bring feelings of comfort. It might even bring feelings of closure, perhaps because we still yearn for deeper connection, or perhaps because we didn't get the chance to say goodbye in the way that we would have liked. So these dreams can serve as a bridge for that healing process, and they can give us a space where we can experience and express emotions that might have been too difficult to face while we were awake, you know? Mm-hmm. And from a spiritual perspective, many cultures and spiritual traditions view dreams of the deceased as messengers or as a form of continued connection. You know, so for instance, in the African diaspora, there is often a belief that the idea of ancestral presence, whether it's through dreams or other means, you know, that belief is that our ancestors or our loved ones who have passed may try to communicate with us. They might try to offer us guidance or even provide comfort through our dreams, you know. And some may interpret these dreams as a sign that the loved one is still watching over us, or that their spirit is still trying to communicate something important, you know. And for others, these dreams may offer reassurance that the loved one is finally at peace, or that they are guiding the dreamer through a challenging situation in their life. That presence of a deceased loved one in a dream can feel healing, because it can bring a sense of ongoing connection, especially when the emotional pain of their absence is still fresh. So ultimately, you know, how a person interprets these dreams depends on their spiritual and their cultural belief. You know, it's important to approach these experiences with an open mind and an open heart, recognizing that dreams can be both a psychological process and a spiritual experience. So if a dream is particularly vivid or impactful, it may be helpful to reflect on the emotions it brought up, or even keep a journal about it. You know, this can be a tool to help us better understand what the dream is teaching us or even trying to reveal to us. So as a therapist, you know, from my perspective, if someone is experiencing frequent dreams of a deceased one or feelings that they have that feel uncertain or unsure or conflicted about their meanings, I would encourage them to explore those dreams in therapy, you know, and we've worked together to uncover what they might be experiencing or expressing about that person's grief or about their relationship, or again, about any unresolved feelings that might still be lingering in ways that we might not have known, you know? So in the end, whether we interpret these dreams as emotional processing or spiritual communication, they can really remind us that the bond with our loved one does not disappear with death. You know, it may evolve, but it continues in different ways, including through dreams that we have about them.
I know I've had a few about Quinn, and they've all been different, but I definitely believe, and like you just said, you still have a, although they're not physically here, we definitely, me and him both believed in spirit and spiritual presence on earth, and I've got to experience that, and it's been good in my dreams, and also physically being different places. I've definitely experienced that. So thank you for that question, whoever sent that in, because I need to explore some dream stuff too. But it's a real thing. So it is.
It's very real.
Man, it is. Okay. So I'm going to delve into maybe two more questions. We're going to wrap shortly. I have a several more, but I think we're going to end up having to do a part two of this, Kristen, because my audience is really, I mean, they have some good questions. Okay. So two more. They do. Okay. This is a good one. What does therapy services look like for a teenager versus an adult? Let's say the topic is depression. What does that look like for a teen navigating therapy, like I say, versus an adult? What would that process be?
That's a good question. That's a good one. You know, when it comes to therapy for a teen versus an adult, there are absolutely differences in how we might approach that topic of depression. But there are also common threads. You know, as a clinician, it's always my goal to start by meeting the client where they are. So no matter whether that's a teenager or an adult, and then tailor that approach based upon their developmental stage, their life experiences, and their individual needs. So for teenagers, you know, therapy often has to account for a few things. You know, first, you know, adolescence is a period of intense emotional and physical change. You know, teens may not yet have the language or the maturity to fully understand or express what they're feeling, especially when it comes to something as complex as depression or grief. You know, so in therapy, we might work on building a strong therapeutic alliance first. And that means that we're establishing trust and we're making sure that the teen feels seen, that they feel heard, and that they know that this is their space where they can express themselves freely without judgment. Because so many teens can struggle with self-esteem, peer pressure, and identity issues. And all of those things can definitely play into their depressive feelings. And so with all of my clients, but even with, like I said, with teens specifically, psychoeducation is so key because I want all of my clients to feel empowered, you know, so I want them to understand what's happening inside of them. So adding a psychoeducational piece to it is so important to me. And so that can look like teaching them about what depression is, how they can cope with it, and why they might be feeling the way that they do. Because often teens may not even realize that what they're feeling is depression, or they may think it's something that they should be able to snap out of. So, you know, I like to help them recognize that depression it's not a personal flaw, but rather it's something that happens to so many of us, you know, for so many different reasons, you know. And for adults, the approach to therapy can be a little bit more straightforward, because by the time someone is an adult, they most likely have encountered a broader range of life experiences, and they might have a better sense of who they are and what their struggles are. But also, it's important to note that depression in adults may look different because they've often had more time to develop those coping mechanisms, some of which might not always be healthy. So, for an example, an adult might have learned to self-medicate with substance, you know, whether that substance is alcohol or whether that substance is social media, you know, so it could be substance or avoidance. You know, and we might need to explore some of those strategies in therapy. And so back to that question about CBT, this is a good place where I would use it, you know, helping clients to identify those negative thought patterns that contribute to their depression and teaching them healthier ways of thinking and showing up in the world and behaving. And so adults might benefit from mindfulness techniques, self-compassion practices, and even exploring their past experiences in more depth, getting to the root of why I even think this way or feel this way. You know, adults have usually experienced more significant life events, you know, like traumas, loss, relationship issues, and that might be contributing to that depression. So in therapy, we will explore how those past events are impacting their now, their present emotional state. So, yeah.
Gotcha.
So I would say in summary, to wrap it up, you know, teens and adults dealing with depression might look similar in some ways, especially mm-hmm. in terms of creating a safe space and fostering yeah. that emotional expression. But the therapeutic mm-hmm. approach is adapted for the individual's developmental needs, life experiences, or even their individual goals. So for teens, therapy may focus more on building trust and psychoeducation and even engaging mm-hmm. in some family systems. And for adults, you know, the work tends to be more goal-oriented sometimes, with a greater emphasis on self-awareness and thought mm-hmm. patterns and mm-hmm. actionable steps for change. But regardless yeah. of the age, the ultimate goal of therapy is always to help the client feel seen, feel heard, and be empowered to navigate their emotions and build that resilience and work on that inner work, that healing.
Yeah. Speaking of age, this is just a quick question and then I'll do my last one. Somebody did ask how old is too young? Is there what age, like how old is too young for a child or to, you know, attend therapy?
Yeah, I'll try to answer this one quick. You know, when it comes yeah. to therapy for our babies, for children, you know, there's no exact too young age. It really depends on okay. the child's emotional maturity. So for the circumstances they're facing and the approach to therapy that's used, you know,
okay.
so children, even as young as 3 or 4, can benefit oh, from wow. therapy in the right context. You know, and it's just about tailoring the process to suit their developmental stage. So for younger children around that age, it can look different, of course. It can look like play therapy. You know, mm-hmm. at those younger yeah. age, children might not have the verbal skills to express complex emotion. So play is their language. Yeah. So through yeah. play, children can act out scenarios or express their fears or process their feelings in a way that feels natural to them, you know? So it's not at that age about sitting down and talking. It can be about creating a space where they can communicate through games and drawing or even storytelling and toys, you know? So.
Yeah. It's funny it depends. Say that. Yeah. Play therapy is where I went through that at one point in when I was younger. I had Steven Johnson mm-hmm. syndrome and I almost died, pretty much lost my skin, my fingernails and everything. And when I went back to school, that was something that the school counselor yeah. recommended. So I did art therapy and as a way of just yeah. acclimating back with my classmates. And yeah, she's going to look different for a while, mm-hmm. you know. Praise God I survived and I cannot even tell now, but I'm glad you brought that right. up because thinking back, I did do that at school. I would go to the office and do art therapy with the art therapist. So yeah, it's real. And, and I think it did help me transition back. Yeah. That's my degree. Yeah. It's in art. So that maybe when I went down that route, but thank you for mentioning. Mm-hmm. I didn't even think about that piece of it when the children question come up, just popped in mm-hmm. my head. I had to do the same thing. Okay, so the last question mm-hmm. with this session, and this is a really good mm-hmm. one, I think, that a lot of people want to know. When it comes to, you know, therapy, we know we always hear, oh, it costs so much. So the question is, do you accept medical insurance or is it self-pay? Or just in general, does health insurance typically cover mental health services from what you've seen from your clientele? I'm sure you have to check into your insurance, but just what have you seen based on that question?
Right. Yeah, that's a great question, you know. And I'm glad you asked it. I'm glad. I don't know if you asked it or whoever asked it, but it's a good question. Yeah, and, you know, it's an important one, too, mm-hmm. you know, when you're considering therapy. For myself, in my practice, I currently only accept self-pay or sliding scale rates. And for me, it's because I don't work directly with insurance companies. And I understand that, you know, insurance can sometimes feel complicated or limiting.
Yes.
And so for my personal reason, I've chosen to keep my practice, you know, more flexible in offering payment options that work are workable for clients. And it just, for me, it offers more freedom in terms of the work that we do together. So without the constraints mm-hmm. that sometimes insurance companies can place around mental health services, like mm-hmm. session limits or required diagnoses, you know, and I believe for me, it helps provide the best possible care for my clients without those additional pressures. But when it comes to health insurance coverage, absolutely. Many insurance plans do indeed cover mental health services, but often this involves being in network with that insurer. And there can be limitations on the types of therapy that can be covered, the number of sessions, mm-hmm. and sometimes even the type of diagnosis that are eligible for coverage. And I know that sometimes that feels like a barrier for people. And that's why, you know, I absolutely believe in offering sliding scale rates, and not just me, so yeah. many clinicians, you know, believe in making therapy accessible to those that need financial flexibility, you know, even if insurance isn't available or isn't an option. And so I would absolutely encourage anyone who's considering therapy to check with their insurance provider and to find out what is covered under that plan, especially if insurance is their preference, you know. But again, for my practice, I just try to keep things simple and focus on the client's needs, you know, offering yeah. that payment option that works within their budget.
Awesome. Awesome. So wrapping up, Ms. Kristen, mm-hmm. what are some key takeaways you want our audience to leave with today, from today's session with you? What are some key takeaways you think from the questions? Anything that sticks out in your head you want to leave people with?
You know, I feel like we've done such beautiful work today. It's kind of felt like a therapy session a little bit, which is great, you know. And I would say for that, which I told y'all, I would say maybe 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 times, which is I want everyone to know that grief is not linear. And, you know, there's no set timeline for how you should feel or when you should move on. Grief is intensely personal and it looks different for everyone. And it can come in waves and it can feel unpredictable. And it's okay not to be okay sometimes. It's okay not to have it all together. That's probably what I would say first. Secondly, allow yourself to feel. Allow yourself to feel all of it. So we're talking about sadness. We're talking about anger. We're talking about confusion or even relief. There is no wrong way to grieve. You know, of course, we want to be mindful of ways that won't be healthy to us. But if we allow grief to take the course that it's asking of us, that it's calling us to, it will understand that it's full of a range of emotions. And part of that healing is accepting yourself and your feelings without judgment, you know? You know, another key takeaway is that give yourself time. Healing takes time. I know we are the microwave generation. I know Amazon done spoiled us. We get our packages in 2 days and it takes more than that. We are like, wait a minute. You know, we are checking the phone. We are checking the apps. We're like, what's going on?
Yes, you know, we are.
Give yourself give yourself time, you know. Yep. It's not a quick fix, you know. Mm-hmm. And even the world and society can sometimes can pressure us to get over it, move on. Mm-hmm. But that's not realistic and it's not healthy. Right. Take things day by day and be gentle with yourself. Something that I'm also always really, really preaching to my clients, and I'm sure you can affirm this, Tiffany, and so many of my clients will be like, oh my gosh, she's probably going to say it. Be kind to yourself.
Be kind to yourself.
Be kind to yourself. I can't emphasize the importance of self-compassion enough. Grief can definitely bring up those feelings of self-doubt, can definitely bring up those feelings of guilt. But remember, you are doing the best you can with the tools you have in that moment. And it's okay not to have all the answers, to be over it right away. And another important piece is that there's so much healing and connection You know, grief can be incredibly isolating, but lean on your community, whether it's your friends, your family, or your therapist. You know, we're here, and support and comfort and understanding is available. You do not have to do this alone. So ask for help when you need it and take the time you need. Grief is a journey and you can do it.
Thank you for those positive words of affirmation, Kristen. Thank you so much for being on today. I'm just so appreciative that I was able to, that you agreed and we were able to bring this information. And I know this is going to touch so many lives for sure. If you don't mind, real quick, just let people know how they can follow you, how they can connect with you. Any social media handles you have, I'll drop them in the video information. But feel free to just let us know where we can find you at.
Absolutely. So you can find me on all social media platforms under the handle KJ the Counselor. And so it's spelled like it sounds. And, you know, and there you can find more information about my practice, the services I offer, and my contact information. And you can feel free to book a consultation or a session directly through those platforms. And, you know, if you're someone who prefers more of a personal contact, feel free to reach out, you know, give me a call. Tiffany got my number.
I do.
And I'd be more than happy to answer any questions you have about the process and how we can work together. So, yeah. And I would say any additional resources, you know, if it's not me, myself, I'm in a community of a phenomenal group of clinicians, people who believe in this work the way I do. So I'm happy to, you know, connect you with them as well and know that there are so many different grief groups that are available. So look for groups in your area. There are often grief-related workshops as well and even online resources. Mm-hmm. And I know, for instance, there's a really, really great group online called Grief Share that a lot of individuals have taken advantage of when they're struggling through grief. And, you know, there's also many free and even low cost helplines that are available as well. And for instance, you know, my business partner, myself, we have an organization called the Kindred Collective, and we are a coaching and consulting company. And we're so dedicated to informing and empowering and illuminating that path for all individuals, whether you're a person, you're a part of a community, or even if you're in an organization that's seeking to become more rooted in practices of connection, of courage, of awareness, of compassion, and another one of my key words today, resilience. You know, and so you can feel free to reach out to us at the Kindred Collective LLC online. And we're starting, I was telling Tiffany this yesterday, we're starting a grief support group next month. So we would love to have any and everyone who needs that type of support, especially during these holidays. We're here for you and we're here with you. So support is available.
Awesome. And I'll be plugging into that. Yeah, the grief group. I think that's going to be amazing. Is it going to be in person or online, or have y'all decided yet?
So we're going to have both options available. So we're having options available because, you know, if you want to come in the house, come in the house and we got you. Okay. But, you know, if you're not nearby, you know, no matter where you are, you know, city to city, state to state, we want to make it accessible to as many people as possible.
Awesome. Awesome. All righty. Well, again, thank you so much, Kristen. This has just been such a blessing. Mm-hmm. Oh, just such a blessing. And I always end every show. One thing Quinn used to say is all is well. And so I'm going to say that all is well. All is well. Thank you again.
That's such a good
one. Appreciate it. Yeah, yeah. There was always this phrase. Always this phrase. And I actually, Kristen, have
what a way to honor his memory.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 This whole podcast is in his memory, in his, you know, he loved helping people, and he enjoyed actually helping people through grief and through that process of planning and all of that. And so I think this is the best way, like we talk a lot about honoring memories, and to honor his memory and keeping this truck going. You know, although he's no longer physically here, he's definitely spiritually here. So I wanted to definitely have this to serve people for sure. And I was going to mention to you, I do have a gift card. I've had a lot of people reach out just wanting to donate different things to this podcast. And I said, what better way to do that but to give my guest a different gift card? So you'll be getting that when I see you in 2 weeks. It's actually a First Watch gift card. Yes.
Tiffany knows I love a meal. That's so sweet. Thank you all. That is so kind. Yes, thank you.
Yes. And it's just a reminder, you know, like I say, we think about grief and we think about you don't really want to eat, you don't want to live. So like everything I try to do when it comes to the donations is in reference to something that I want the audience to take away. Please eat healthy food when you are grieving, whatever.
Yes.
So I will get that.
Nourish your body. Take care of yourself.
Yes.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you, everyone. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Well, y'all have a good rest of the day. To the audience that's watching, Kristen, thank you so much for being on. I appreciate this. You just don't know. And until next time, you guys have a great week. And like I said, we're going to end it with all is well. Thank y'all.
All is well.
We hope that today's episode has encouraged you and helped to identify strategies to navigate your grief and begin the process of moving forward in life. Grief Tribe, Healing Vibes. What were some key takeaways from today's episode? Drop a comment below and remember to like, follow, and subscribe.